Hello, and welcome to the ACE Pod 3.6, brought to you, as always, by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. We have a full football show for you today. I know that is not necessarily what you always want to hear, but with Jim Harbaugh contract extension talk going around and signing day 2021, at least the early signing day, wrapping up on Wednesday, we have plenty to discuss. We're going to do more of a big picture look at the signing day stuff than what Brian and Seth covered in the live signing day pod on Wednesday. And then, you know, there's been some developments in the Ward Manuel, Jim Harbaugh, peace accords, what do we want to call them? So we'll get into that soon. But first, Connor and Dan are the two people joining me on the show today. So, Connor, how you doing? How's your newsletter going?
Hey, everyone. I'm doing about as well as could be hoped. I'm really glad I don't have to watch Michigan get eviscerated by Iowa. Happy to be missing that. And my newsletter, I'll plug it here once again, is called A Lonely Impulse of Delight. You can find it at connorrosesouthern.substack.com or just by looking up A Lonely Impulse of Delight on Substack or on my Twitter or in the show notes. And I talk about how stories work. Books, movies, video games, things that are not Michigan football.
Yeah, you also had a thread of some of your favorite stuff that you posted in there that I really enjoyed. So I will plug that for you a little bit because I believe there was a particularly enlightening discussion of the thing that I enjoyed.
Thanks, man.
Strong work.
Thank you.
And then Dan,
I don't have anything.
Reactions ready. You've got coaching reactions ready. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling not as doom and gloom as everyone else in the fan base. I think the word of the day is patience, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to display any on Twitter. I'm very bored in quarantine, and my job is slowed down, and that means that I'm going to be posting as much as possible. And you're going to get my opinion whether you like it or not.
Yeah, one thing about this coaching search is that a lot of times our emotional pull does not necessarily line up with how things that we should be reacting to things, at least rationally. And I am guilty of this as well. I'm kind of trying to talk myself down from saying certain ridiculous things that add to the kind of malaise the fan base, but I did joke about Michigan retaining Jim Harbaugh and hiring Bob Diaco as a defense coordinator on Twitter today. So I'm a terrible person. We might all be terrible people, or at least terrible influences, but we're trying our best. And with that, we should pry open with the thing I've been sort of trying to talk back against my mentions about this evening, which is I believe Angelique Changelis of the Detroit News was the first one to report that Jim Harbaugh and Ward Manuel are meeting today to discuss, today being Thursday, to discuss a contract extension. There were not many other details in terms of, how close they are on said contract extension. Have they been talking about this before? Which, of course, they have. Anybody who doesn't think they have, I don't know what to tell you. They've been sitting down and meeting together for the last few weeks. I don't know what else they'd be talking about. But this kind of set off a new round of consternation among Michigan fans about, are they thinking about extending Harbaugh? What's with this long timeline? Is Ward Manuel screwing this up? And there's a whole underlying aspect of the Ward Manuel discussion that I don't want to get into too much here, but it grosses me out. But focusing on kind of the main timeline stuff, Dan, I'll let you start with this because I know you're ready to fire off. And you have preached that the word of the day is patience, and that is absolutely what people need to be displaying a little bit more of right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, and we have now entered the Dan, go tire yourself out portion of the podcast.
We're letting the dog out again.
I want to put it up front that I don't put it past anyone in Michigan's athletic department to be screwing this up. So that is absolutely on the table. I don't want to say, like, oh, don't worry at all. It's totally possible that we end up with a situation that we're all very unhappy with at the end of all this. But what I will say is that it just feels like every time there's a coaching search, and this is all fans, not just Michigan fans. I saw it last year with Michigan State. We all just, two things. One, everyone believes that it's a mess from the outside looking in because you're going through a coaching change and by definition, it's going to look bad because you're moving on from an unsuccessful coach and the program, by definition, is in a little bit of shambles, which Michigan's program is undeniably in right now. So it looks bad from the outside. But then the second thing is that everyone just believes exactly what people are saying to them. And like every single thing that comes out, whether it's like, Jim Harbaugh saying like, hey, I expect to be at Michigan. And like Sam Webb's reporting that he's saying that to recruits. And I have no doubt that he's saying that to recruits. But what is he supposed to say?
Yeah, exactly. What else would he tell a recruit?
Yeah. What would he be telling them besides, like, even if he in his mind right now is like, oh, I'm not coming back. Like, I'm going to try to go to the NFL. I'm going to try to do something else. Like, I'm sorry. What would he would not be saying to these kids like, hey, we'll see. Like, there's just no way you could fire him with cause if he was saying that to recruits. Like, we could be totally not worrying about his buyout, because that's like a fireable offense and something that, would get him out the door immediately. So he's saying everything he needs to say. And, Ward Manuel saying like, oh, we're going to meet at the end of the season. Like, you cannot take these things literally. Like, they're not going to tell you what exactly is going on or what feelers they've put out or who's reached out to Jim Harbaugh. Because you lose all your leverage that way. So like, you do have to be a little bit patient. And I don't think signing day changes the likelihood of Jim Harbaugh coming back or not coming back, because a lot of these kids have been committed to Michigan for a long time, and it's signing day. It's time to sign. I don't know what the fact that like some kids signed with Michigan and some didn't, and some said that they were, unsure about Harbaugh's future. I mean, like, this is what it was always going to look like. I don't know exactly what people were expecting to see from signing day or from Ward Manuel or from Jim Harbaugh. A little bit rambling, but I hope that that all makes sense.
No, that's a really good point to start with, is that, I mean, and this is something that I believe we've said on this show. I know we have said it amongst ourselves in private. I know I've tweeted something to this effect. Whether Michigan was kind of nailing the smoke and mirrors aspect of this and getting, all the behind the scenes stuff exactly right and really crushing this coaching search, because most good coaching searches happen almost entirely behind the scenes. That and Michigan just floating along and messing it up and kind of tinkering around until they have no choice but to extend Harbaugh, because that's really the only option left. Those were always going to look very, very similar, if not pretty much exactly the same, until a final decision was announced. So very little that has happened over the last few weeks has necessarily moved the needle for me. Dan, you mentioned the quotes that Harbaugh gave to recruits, or what recruits were saying Harbaugh was telling them. And what Harbaugh has put out in public. For one, of course, he's going to say he's continuing to coach Michigan. He's recruiting for Michigan. For another, I went and pulled up some old stories from when Harbaugh and the 49ers were very much on the outs. And even after Harbaugh was, let go, and the 49ers said that it was a mutual decision, Harbaugh continued to insist that it was not his choice and that he had been planning all along to coach the 49ers in the final year of his contract. I would not be shocked if that's sort of how this ends up playing out. And I actually think, and we'll get into this more later, that the recruiting class can almost be an argument in favor of moving on from Harbaugh now, even more so because we expected it to be worse off than it ended up being. So there's a lot going on, and also it's a very good point to mention that there are people with certain vested interests in coaching searches, The people with vested interests are actually more inclined to talk to the media than the people who are making the decisions. So yeah, taking everything that is put into a report, especially a sourced report with nobody on the record, at face value. I'd like to think that we've been through enough coaching searches to know that we shouldn't be doing that. So with that out of the way, Connor, you've been sitting patiently through all this. Do you have anything to add to kind of the extension discussion and consternation around all this?
No, I think you guys covered it. And I have sort of honestly have tuned out of the like coaching search intrigue to an extent. And I'm trying to just like think about the roster, which is a little bit silly because like obviously the roster would be shaken up quite a bit if there's a new coach coming in, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say this, this is probably a good lead into the signing day discussion. I think what happened yesterday should hearten everyone. And I agree with Ace that it doesn't necessarily constitute a case for keeping Jim Harbaugh. I think that it just shows that even during a truly nightmarish year where Michigan is outright embarrassing every time they step on the field and at the tail end of a long malaise in terms of games against Ohio State and every other bad thing that I don't need to recite for Michigan fans who are familiar with it, somehow these 17, 18-year-old kids who have many options, a lot of them are still in love with Michigan. When they get to see the campus, they know the brand, they know the history, and a lot of them are into it. And we should be counting our blessings because that's something that transcends coaching staffs. And, you know, in some ways we're maybe luckier than recent on-field history than maybe we deserve based on results. So I think we should all be happy about that right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the recruiting weekend, one of the standout recruiting weekends of the season was one where the coaches were not allowed to have any contact with the recruits. The recruits went on a self-guided tour. Michigan lost miserably, and they still loved the campus and just everything about what they got to experience there. So yeah, it's definitely a situation that is worth discussing further as it relates to recruiting and Jim Harbaugh and kind of how to handle reacting to this class. And so I think we should just dive right into that. On the other side of this break, we will discuss, we will go through the position groups. We're gonna talk kind of where Michigan helped themselves and where maybe they need a little bit more in terms of viable bodies at certain positions. And we will discuss kind of the big picture impact of signing day 2021.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
He's the one. since you don't have to walk a plank. The game is rigged, go figure. Slideshow tanked, and your flagship sank. So we're taking all our miss to the bank. Suggest down for get who to thank. Cause we're taking our miss.
All right, Michigan's 2021 class is, for the most part, in this was early signing day, and as we will discuss, there are some recruitments still outstanding that Michigan could be involved in. But for the time being, all 20 of their commits have sent in their letters of intent, so those guys are at least locked in for the moment, although if there is a coaching change, you imagine Michigan would let some guys out of those letters of intent if they were very, very intent on playing for Jim Harbaugh. Although, as we discussed in the first segment, that was not the main feel that you necessarily got from this class. It was more wanting to play at Michigan. But a very, very strong offensive class overall, the number 12 class in the country and the number 2 class in the Big Ten, albeit a healthy distance behind Ohio State. A slight lack of locals, I would say, but overall, this was a pretty good job of salvaging a class considering the circumstances surrounding the program right now. So, Connor, I'll start with you since we let Dan out of the doghouse already in the first segment. What was kind of your big takeaway from signing day? Did this go better or worse than you expected?
I think it's impossible to complain about how it went on offense because I haven't gone back and checked everything. There's a pretty good chance this is the best class Michigan has signed on offense since peak Lloyd Carr, like Lloyd at the peak of his powers, maybe like 20 years ago. it's a really, really good offensive class. It's headlined by 3 skill guys in J.J. McCarthy, Donovan Edwards, and Xavier Worthy. He could have played absolutely anywhere and would have been had a good chance to contribute anywhere early on, honestly. Those guys are, you all know about them. They're great. We'll get into details there. And then everything else on offense, I mean, the rest of the receiver group is good. Taviar Dunlap, also a very good running back recruit. Lewis Hansen, good tight end. Good, solid offensive line that I expect Ed Warner, hopefully will be around no matter what, to turn into good players. I mean, it really has to make you happy on that side of the ball. And the defensive class, the nicest thing you can say about it is I really, really love Junior Colson. I think there's a couple underrated guys in it, and it's not finished.
Yes, it's not finished is definitely a key for the defensive side of the ball, especially when you consider that Michigan hopefully will be hitting the transfer market extremely hard this offseason at certain position groups. Dan, before we do the position by position breakdown, any sort of big picture takeaways beyond other than the discussion we'll get into about how it impacts coaching stuff?
My very brief take is that this is a complete offensive class. I am very high on at least one person at every position group there, and it is greatly weighed down by the defensive side of the ball, where there is a lack of both top line talent and just horrible failures at 2 positions of need that we will get into. So it is really, really dragged down by what we failed to get, and that sort of sullies what we were able to get.
Understandable, given that we've come to learn that poor roster construction can really take apart a team more than their overall level of talent would seemingly indicate. With that, we should jump in and do this position group by position group. We'll start with quarterback because that's fun, and it's also the first one on the sheet. J.J. McCarthy, 5-star, could have gone most schools in the country, decided to go to Michigan. He was IMG's quarterback last year. Looks prototypical, shall we say. So not sure. I don't think Michigan could have done any better there, obviously. Anything to add on McCarthy from either of you guys?
Nothing besides I'm really high on him. He's a 5-star, which is always nice. He really held this class together from a leadership perspective. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably heard that on the main recruiting pod, so I will not go too in-depth there. I think he's got the that sort of pitcher's wind-up that, you know, a lot of elite quarterbacks now have, which, you know, has an ability to deliver at different arm angles. But, yeah, I mean, look, Michigan needed a guy that could come in and at least compete for the job next year. And they got that. So, you know, I don't think there's really anything else to say.
I think here's the key stat. If you're a Michigan fan and you're sick of seeing quarterbacks fail to hit throws, shall we say, for the last, decade. the key stat here is, like, not only does J.J. McCarthy have, like, all of the good camp stuff, like, he can throw it very far from different angles, he can throw off platform. He's just a really talented guy in all those regards. As a sophomore, he completed 76% of his passes in games, which is bonkers. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that was in Illinois, not at IMG. So, yeah. This was not working with, you know, the best receivers in the country. High school receivers aren't all necessarily known for their, you know, sticky hands. So to be able to post a completion rate like that, high school stats often relatively meaningless, but that one stands out.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I'll say about quarterback as a position group, because again, this is pretty straightforward. Michigan in this offseason, you know, right now it's projected to be Milton, McNamara, Vallari, and McCarthy all on roster. Somebody's going to win that job, and at least one of these guys is going to transfer. So I would be in favor of Michigan taking a transfer quarterback this offseason, even if they don't start next year. It can't hurt. You don't want to end up with only two relatively playable scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. I don't know if anyone has an alternate take.
No, I had a take that I differed with you on this when you did our pod, and the more that I've thought about it, like, you know, a lot of the, like, takes about Dylan McCaffrey, for instance, this year became moot because, like, regardless of where you thought he was on the depth chart, Michigan almost desperately needed three playable quarterbacks, right? So,
not just almost.
Yeah, well, right. They did, and they were, yeah. And COVID kind of spared them somewhat there. But the point is just that, like, you really need three playable guys, ideally. And I agree that of the current group of guys, sadly, we'd be lucky to get one who's decent out of that group the way things are going. And then McCarthy might be playable, but will be 18, 19 years old. So I'm with you 100%. If there's a good transfer, go get him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that, given all we've seen from the quarterback position and how deep Michigan has had to reach into their quarterback depth chart several times during the Harbaugh era and prior to that. J.J. McCarthy is going to have a chance to start. I mean, he's just very, very good. So that is an exciting pickup. Also exciting, the pickups at running back. We mentioned Donovan Edwards out of Bloomfield Hills and Texan Tavier Dunlap, who's a high three-star. Edwards is a fringe five-star on 247 and within the top 100 on both other sites. He's drawn comparisons to the likes of Alvin Kamara, which very much excites me as somebody who owns Kamara in fantasy this year. Michigan obviously already has a pretty solid running backs room, even though they lose most likely Chris Evans after this year. They bring back pretty much everyone else who's contributed, at least as it's projected right now. Dan, how do you see these guys fitting in, and do you think... I mean, as I anticipate, he will. Do you think Edwards gets on the field early, and what kind of impact does he make?
So to answer those questions, I absolutely think Edwards gets on the field early. Not only because I think he's that good, but because I think to get him, this staff probably made a lot of promises, quite frankly. you're going to get the first carry type touch it, or promises and all that.
They promised he could take grad level literature classes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I'm really high on Edwards. He's a very polished running back. You know, there was a article about how he was working on his breaks in and out of routes in the off season. You know, I think he's that complete type of back that I don't even really know. I feel like trying to comp him to a running back is kind of tough because I do think he's just that all around. So, you know, he'll be on the field right away, especially if, you know, I mean, it seems like they're going to lose Evans because I think he's going to the Shrine game. And then Haskins, Charbonnet, Turner all have the same eligibility, and you have to imagine you're going to lose one of them. Like, I'm not trying to – that's no inside info. I'm just
– yeah, it's it just feels a, like a reality of the way it works.
So you're going to lose one of them, and then, you know, probably Haskins is your running back one. Corum is, you know, going to get carries, but he's probably still too small to be, like, a pass protector, like, in on passing downs. And so then, yeah, you know, I mean, I think Edwards is going to have to play, and I think he will play early. And then Dunlap I really like as well. I'm not going to comp everyone, but I do want to get this comp out there. Dunlap reminds me a lot of Devion Smith in the way that he sort of, like, rage runs through the defense and also runs, like, very upright. He runs with an open chest. It's not the way you would coach a running back, but I think it suits him in the same way that, you know, it kind of suited Devion Smith, even though, you know, Devion Smith wasn't your typical running back. So Michigan needed two guys here, given the attrition they're going to see, and they got two guys. And, you know, I think you can't be anything but happy with this group.
I want to sing the praises of Dunlap. He's from Texas, running, which is, you know, where you want to get running backs from. Also a state that Michigan struggled to recruit, so lots of good stuff there. He reminds me of a lot of sort of high-running recent Notre Dame backs, which is definitely a compliment. And then Edwards, what can you say? I mean, Michigan, kind of a must-get. He was their number one target on their board overall, apparently. Super excited for him. And I just want to underline what Dan was saying. Like, you know, I don't think that probably, barring bigger attrition than we think, like, it's probably neither of these guys is going to, like, immediately have to contribute. But they, you know, I think Edwards especially will be on the field. And the running backs room is just, in, you know, in terms of talent, is a strength of this program. And the key thing is to put together an offense that allows them to be that. But you can't complain about the talent here. And even if you lose multiple guys to transfers, you still probably have, you're still probably going to have three very strong backs, if not four or five. This is just like, and I want to also say, Jay Harbaugh, man. Jay Harbaugh is one of the best coaches on the staff. Shout out to him. Really, really good job here.
He loves a good nepotism tweet. And that's because he has risen above nepotism. So yeah, props to Jay Harbaugh for being one of the best position coaches on this team, by a lot. Just to add quickly to that, one of the things I'm going to be most fascinated in next year, no matter who is on the coaching staff, is how they use Edwards and also which other running backs they put on the field, because this is a situation where you've got a lot of talent in the backfield and you've also got guys in, especially Corum and Edwards, who can be used in a number of different ways. Corum's size maybe limits him a little bit in terms of how much you want to move him around the formation. But with Edwards, he's like a pretty strapping 5'11 already. He has played in the slot and out wide in high school. He actually spent a kind of more time that I think was smart at wide receiver on West Bloomfield, at least if they were trying to get the most yardage out of their best player. But it certainly helped develop him all around, and his pass catching is praised as being very, very high level. So if you get that kind of, I mentioned Alvin Kamara, or, you know, kind of Kareem Hunt level impact, where you can have a guy all of a sudden split out and run routes, and if the other team is in man, those routes are going to be on a linebacker, or if those teams are in zone, you're kind of having them burn a defensive back or two on a defending a running back. That's something that we always wanted to see Michigan do with Chris Evans, and Evans never quite got there for a number of reasons. But I've seen some people do the Chris Evans comp for Donovan Edwards, and Donovan Edwards is the five-star version of Chris Evans. So that is a very exciting thing to see. Hopefully get incorporated correctly into the offense, which we'll wait on for a little bit. Speaking of the offense taking form, Michigan did not take a fullback. Dan has written down in our show notes, fullbacks are canceled, and I'm not letting Seth convince me we need one. I apologize, Seth. It was just in the show notes. I'm only reading what was put in front of me, and I didn't put these together. But yeah, I'm in agreement there. So I think we could move on pretty quickly from that before Seth kills me. The receivers group. This is another plus position group for Michigan in this recruiting class. Xavier Worthy is obviously the headliner after reaffirming his commitment to Michigan and signing despite a late cycle visit to Alabama and a push from them, which if you want any sign that that guy is a dude at wide receiver, a late push from Alabama is a pretty good one. And then Michigan gets another top 250 commit in Christian Dixon out of California. And then supplement that with East Lansing's very own Andrel Anthony. So some decent numbers here and some exciting talent.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the highlight of the class, at least in my opinion. You know, I think Michigan definitely needed a couple of outside guys. Depending on what Ronnie Bell does next year, it's really just him and Cornelius Johnson and I guess Roman Wilson, who are your outside guys. But even with all those three, you don't really have one that has proven they can really, you know, go up and get it, so to speak. And I think Andrel Anthony and Christian Dixon are both those type of guys. I want to say that Andrel Anthony was a guy that looked like he was going to go to Michigan State for a while, and I was like really bummed that I that we were missing out on him. This was like one of the first things Connor and I ever talked about was Andrel Anthony, and he was like, you know, a 3.5 star or like a mid 3 star to the services. But I just really like how he runs his routes. I really like how he plays the ball. I'm really glad that Michigan was able to kind of come in and steal him away from Michigan State. Christian Dixon is a guy that's got more athleticism than production. I think he's a guy you put in the incubator for a year and try to, you know, bring out the athleticism on the football field. And then Xavier Worthy, I really have never been more in on a player than him. I mean, this kid is just maybe the fastest guy in his class. He's 6'1". Like, I can't say enough about him. I really think he's going to be that dude. And Michigan needs to let him cook and just, like, let athletes be athletes and just figure out their offense in time for him. Because if Xavier Worthy isn't successful and doesn't go in, like, the early rounds, it's a Michigan problem. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I completely agree with, like, you've put it very well with the other two guys. Worthy, you've all heard a lot about him. If you have not watched this kid's high school film, go do yourself a favor. It's just that stupid film where it's like, how is he doing that to these kids in California, which is pretty good ball, right? And I agree with Dan. Like, he should instantly get a look for all return positions. And he needs to be on the field on offense. Like, there's no excuse to not use this kid. You know, he's going to be at Michigan for 3 years if he's healthy, and then he's going to be gone. So get him out there. I don't know that we've seen an athlete like this guy in a while, and that's taking anything away from guys like Henning and Jackson, who are also super fast. But Worthy is first. There are not 10 receivers that are more talented than him in the country. That's his ranking is far too low.
Yeah, the 247 comp for him is DeSean Jackson, who even as he advances in age in the NFL, still can pretty much get behind any defensive back that he wants. So with that as a starting point, you have to imagine that Worthy is going to be able to get on the field right away, even though he's a little slight. His build might remind you of young Mario Manningham a little bit. But young Mario Manningham was also pretty good and did not have Worthy's top-end speed. Although I don't know if Worthy has Manningham's double-move route chops yet, but hopefully those develop. And, anybody who Alabama was taking a real hard look at should probably get on the field for you at wide receiver right away. This is a guy who runs a 10.5 100-meter dash. And is
as a sophomore.
Yes. And is also described as a crisp route runner, so and natural pass catcher. So when you put those things together, it is hard to imagine him not being very good sooner or later and at least making some sort of impact early. And that will be very nice for whoever is playing quarterback, because hopefully you can just kind of put the ball up there and let him run under it. So that the wide receiver group, solid. I will add to the Anthony Love by saying that when I watched his film early on, I was like, this is a guy who's going to go to state and put up an 100-yard game against Michigan at some point. So I'm glad that that's not possible anymore.
Yeah, they call him the next Ricky White.
Moving on to tight end. No, just kidding. Finish your thought.
No, I mean, I was saying just in terms of numbers there, you know, you've got a couple guys bunched up into the sophomore class. Michigan probably loses somebody from that group. So it's good. I'm just saying it's good they took three, and it's good that they got the outside guys, which they definitely needed. A few too many slot types on this roster, I would say.
Yeah, they have been pretty slot heavy recently, so it was good to get legitimate outside guys, because you do want a little bit of variety there. You don't want a Ace Sanders era South Carolina Mighty Mites core that can get pretty limited. At tight end, Michigan only gets the one. Not surprisingly, he is from Massachusetts. Lewis Hansen from St. Sebastian's in Needham, Massachusetts. This is Don Brown country. Michigan has had success with tight ends from Don Brown country. So, and this is a very high rated Don Brown country recruit. This is a legitimate 4-star in the top 300 nationally. So I'll let you guys discuss Hansen, since I'm pretty sure y'all have watched film on him more recently than I have. So Connor, what are kind of your impressions of the young tight end out of Massachusetts?
He's been in the class a long time, and I confess I have not done as much homework on him, just because I looked at his ranking and everything about him, and I was like, yep, he's got the measurables, he's got the ranking. Iowa offered him as a tight end, which is pretty much all I needed to know. We're good. I mean, no complaints. Tight end room was very weird this year because we expected it to be good, and there were a lot of ups and downs. I think he's a solid addition. I think Michigan's looking to take, you know, two very talented guys next year, hopefully. But, you know, feeling good about this kid. I think he'll be a contributor.
Ups and downs was a kind way to describe the tight end play this year.
Yeah.
He reminds me of he looks a little bit more like a guy that's going to grow into a Sean McCune type tight end than a Eric All type tight end. Even though, I guess, I don't know. Eric All's a little bit weird because he's shaped like a wide receiver tight end, but he is a good blocker. Lewis Hansen to me reminds me of like a 4-star Sean McCune.
Yeah, he's got the look of a true inline guy. I mean, he's already almost 6'5 and over 230 pounds, which is a significant amount of heft, more than what Eric All was carrying when he arrived on campus. So it looks like somebody, Hansen looks like somebody who can definitely grow into an inline tight end who should have receiving upside there and be at the same time a plus blocker. And it really is important with these offenses to have somebody you can put out there who does not tip your hand went at tight end in terms of running versus passing. And Hansen looks like he can do that. So might have liked to see maybe another tight end in the class. But other than that, not a lot to complain about here in terms of what Michigan is bringing in.
Yep. I would say, and in terms of numbers, I mean, you could maybe say they should have gone two. I think they tried to go two. But if they can hold on to All and Schoonmaker and Hibner, so just as long as none of the three guys in front of him transfers in the offseason, you can probably get away with four tight ends on roster. You probably want two next year. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe hit the transfer market for somebody to bridge the gap at some point, which is something that kind of looms over this entire discussion, is that the transfer market is going to be wild this year. So a lot of our opinions on position groups at least how they look next year, are going to have to wait until we see how that shakes out. Speaking of which, we can move right on to offensive tackle, which has a transfer in the class, in Willie Allen from Louisiana Tech, who is massive, if nothing else, and seems like there could be some upside to explore there. He's kind of an interesting sit-out-and-play transfer who should at least make it onto the two-deep. Meanwhile, Michigan also gets a top 100 offensive tackle from in-state in Giovanni El Hadi from Sterling Heights at a four-star All-American center in Cass Tech's Raheem Anderson. Another interior top 300 interior lineman in IMG's Greg Crippen, and another like lower ranked but still kind of high three-star molding upside guy in Tristan Bounds, who is listed at nearly 6'8", 285 already out of Connecticut. So that is the offensive line haul. It's a five-man class if you include the Allen transfer. Does this kind of satisfactorily plug the holes for you guys? Dan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, I think offensive line is the hardest position to really project. It's just hard. These guys come in and they're raw and they're, you know, fat, quite frankly. and you know, you just have to create NFL offensive linemen out of them. you know, I would say that there was a lot of complaining early in the cycle because Michigan did transparently miss on a lot of like the high five stars they were going after. But you end up with four guys in El Hadi, who's number 85 in the country. I think his comp is like John Runyon. He looks to me like high four-star John Runyon, because I think he could go. He could play inside, but he's athletic enough to play outside as well. And then, you know, Raheem Anderson, number 210 in the country, Greg Crippen, 275, and Tristan Bounds, 419, but was like being, I think, actively recruited by Notre Dame. You'll never get a true answer about, you know, who Notre Dame like offered and didn't, because they tend to say, oh, we weren't that interested after they lose recruitment. Shout out Tom Loy, big L in Tom Loy. And then you get like this bonus transfer, Willie Allen, who is nothing if not huge and promising. So, I mean, look, I think the offensive line struggles this year were a lot about just a lot of new starters and then losing your two tackles, and it just was never going to go well after that. I still believe in Ed Warner, and I believe in the guys he brought in, and, you know, there's just nothing really to complain about here. The numbers are all good. Everything's good.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think that, you know, Crippen and Anderson are like, they're at risk of being like these like nondescript four stars because they're just like solid guys who've been in the class forever. But I'm psyched for them. El Hadi, you know, big in state get. Will be interesting to see whether he plays inside or outside. The guy I'm most excited about actually is Tristan Bounds, the lowest ranked one. I've watched a bunch of film on him. And I want to tell everybody, I know he has bend because the kid is 6'8", and at Choate, you know, one of the best prep schools in the world, he's having to block guys who are like 5'10 all the time. So he can get down and play with agility against mighty might defensive ends. But yeah, he's like, you know, he's a big basketball player. He's a really good athlete. I think if he'd played at a school that had any kind of football program, I think he'd be a solid four-star guy. I am still in the camp of being very optimistic about offensive line overall in this program, despite the struggles this year and despite the very weird Zach Carpenter transfer.
Yeah, I mean, Carpenter apparently was homesick, and that's just something that it's hard to anticipate when you're recruiting a guy that he's going to want to go back to Cincinnati. I mean, that's part of running a football program where you're trying to juggle 85 scholarship players and whatnot. But back to this class, I agree with the excitement about Bounds. I mean, first of all, I'd be excited for pretty much anybody coming out of Connecticut who actually like hit the recruiting radar enough to sneak his way inside the top 450 prospects in the country, get on the fringe of four-star status. Because it's just hard when you're there to get any sort of attention. And then his offer sheet has some intriguing names from around the country. You've got Cal on here, Indiana, which has produced some solid offensive linemen, Louisville, Nebraska, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Texas, UCLA. I mean, that is a national offer sheet, for especially for a guy from Connecticut who isn't ranked that high. So that, I think, is a pretty exciting pickup. And then I just want to mention that I think the way that the recruiting sites rank now, where it is more aimed towards where projecting these guys as NFL prospects instead of as college prospects, hurts the two interior line prospects in this class, Raheem Anderson and Greg Crippen, because Anderson is 6'3", Crippen is 6'4". They're both kind of interior-only guys. Generally, these recruiting sites tend to save the top 100 offensive line spots for guys who either look like they could walk into an NFL locker room already in play, or are sort of prototype tackles. So for Anderson and Crippen to even rank as high as they are, I think shows a really solid floor for those guys, and I think they'll be multi-year contributors. So overall, a pretty strong offensive line class, and one that if Ed Warner is still around, you can trust to develop. Unfortunately, this means we now have to move to the defense. Nose tackle is listed here.
Technically.
Dan, how'd they do there?
I mean, bad. So there's nobody in this class that can even project to nose tackle. I don't know what to say about it. I am despondent. My expectations were low, but not this low. It's really rough, and I just don't understand what they're doing here. The only two people on this entire roster that can play nose tackle, conceivably play nose tackle, are Chris Hinton and Mozzie Smith. And we don't know. Hinton showed some flashes this year. We don't know what he would have done in a full year, but we don't even know if either of those two guys are going to be any good. I guess you technically have Jess Spate, who didn't even play on whatever. I'm not even going to get that low. But, I mean, and there's nobody in this class that can even conceivably play nose tackle. So I don't know what they're doing. They didn't take anyone that could play nose tackle last year. They didn't take anyone that can play nose tackle this year. They recruited Rayshon Benny, who ended up, committing to Michigan State. He hasn't signed yet. They're still hoping to potentially flip him, but you gotta have more on the board. They should be taking three legitimate defensive tackle prospects that can potentially play nose. And they lost guys to Boston College, MSU, and UCF. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. It is baffling to me. There's just nothing to be said that, besides the lack of commitments at nose tackle drags down this class, into, if we had to grade it, I legitimately think, into the C, range, just because they're because you missed on your most important position group. I don't know what else to say. So, yeah.
I mean, my more optimistic read is that the class isn't over, and the coaching staff and Matt Dudek on Twitter have made it clear they're trying to sign some defensive tackles. Whether that works is, optimistically they could still get George Rooks and Rayshon Benny. Why are those guys not already committed? And you actually left one of the schools off. My favorite is they lost a defensive tackle recruit to Minnesota, which doesn't even play defense. I just can't. I'm with you, Dan. I don't think it drags the class down to a C level, but I agree that it's just it makes no sense at the program level. How are you not just offering every defensive tackle you can find that's a plausible potential NFL defensive tackle in the future all over the country, and trying to throw money at them? I don't get how your program can be so dysfunctional that that's not what you're doing when you're Michigan. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no matter, even if they recover a little bit from this and maybe land Benny, it doesn't seem like the conversation around Rooks is at all positive right now in terms of Michigan's chances with him. But Benny, it does seem like, I mean, him not signing with Michigan State speaks volumes, I would say. And that seems to be because Michigan is continuing to push there. That said, I wanted to throw things when I saw that Cincinnati got a four-star, 295-pound nose tackle who had a Michigan offer signed in their class. It's just, I mean, like you guys said, it's just a failure of the coaches and the recruiting staff. Even if they're saying they're going to get somebody later, they need more. They need more bodies. And the fact of the matter is, most high school defensive tackles have now signed somewhere. So if it isn't Rayshon Benny, they're going to start reaching pretty far down the board pretty quickly or desperately adding transfers. And generally, transfers are on the board for a reason. So it's really disappointing to see nose tackle recruiting going this direction. We can, I guess, expand this conversation to three tech now because you do at least have a body there. Again, you would like for Michigan to recruit more tackles. But they have Dominic Guidice, who's the lowest ranked member in the class, but somebody that the coaching staff seems to really love. And hopefully that guy can make an impact because he's really the only him and I guess TJ Guy long term are really the only even conceivable defensive tackles in the class.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing but projects in this class at defensive tackle, and there's nothing but projects on this roster. I mean, the list of tackles in this roster right now is, if we're going to go three tech, I guess, you know, Donovan Jeter, who at least is the right size, Welshoff, project, who, you know, played well this year, but flashed a little bit, but was still limited to passing downs. And, you know, we're not sure if he can really hold up against the run yet. And then Mike Morris and Chris Jenkins and Dominic Guidice.
It's Jadis, but
I know I'm supposed to. Well, there's the dirty secret is that I'm mostly German. I play
the proud Italian is yeah. actually.
I play an Italian on the internet. But no, it's really it's still dire. You need guys that come in at 300 pounds. They're not that hard to find and. Michigan chose not to take one again, and you know, I mean, again, I don't know. I at three tech, I at least can say that you know we know that you can make a decent three tech out of a strong defensive end. But my two questions are like, why are we doing that? We don't have to. This is Michigan. Like, we can recruit guys that project a defensive tackle and aren't just you know Carlo Kemp. And then you know, like, what do you do about nose tackle? Which you can't really move a strong defensive end all the way, you know, to nose tackle. So, I mean, look, two huge failures here at both three tech and nose. There's just no way around it.
Yeah, it's tough to say anything else about it just because you don't want to bash the kids in the class because
it's
not their fault that Michigan isn't recruiting more top end guys at this position. And like, I legitimately think like, I mean, we'll discuss him maybe a little bit more at defensive end, but TJ Guy like has some serious upside. And Guidice could be a nice program guy. But you just need more than that. And for them to continually go in, especially after the class last year where you had projects, and you're looking at the roster, and there's very little proven to then go back to, we're gonna go with guys who are going to take 3 years to marinate before we can really put them on the field. It doesn't fit with what they've got on the roster right now. And even if they hit the grad transfer market and the regular transfer market, it's hard to see them shoring this position group up to the level that we remotely want to see it at, given the last couple recruiting classes unless they pretty much hit on, I don't know, like 3 out of 4 project attempts that they've got going right now. Like they really need a spectacular hit rate on this, and I don't know if any one of us has a strong amount of trust in Sean Nua to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is there's just not even enough prospect or projects. If they wanted to really go the project route, they didn't take enough. Because, you know, those aren't going to be 100% hit. And they only have one in each class right now. It's Welshoff, Morris, Jenkins, and Guidis.
Jadis.
I swear to God. Jadis, I'm sorry. But, they didn't even take enough of those projects to, you know, really have, like, a good hit rate. You know, you'd want at least, like, 2.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, so. I'm almost like, can we check out some of our many interior offensive linemen, many of whom won't get to play if the team's actually healthy, like, as DTs? Because it's just, like, I don't know where else they're going to find bodies. Yeah, there's guys potentially good in the transfer market. Michigan hasn't had any luck with DTs doing that either. It's truly, a lot of things get overhyped by like fans as being easier than they actually are for the coaches. It is actually easier for Michigan to recruit defensive tackles than they have been. It's a mystery why they've been so foolish and ineffective at it.
One fun subplot of the season is every time I turn on a Florida game, I notice that TJ Slayton is playing nose tackle for them. And that was somebody who Michigan was recruiting as an offensive lineman, and when he insisted that he wanted to play defense, they decided they didn't want him anymore.
But is
Florida's defense any good? Does anybody know?
They're probably better than Michigan, at least.
I mean, we're on defensive minute 15 of defensive tackle talk, and I'm sure people are tired of it. But there's guys that, like, Michigan passed on all over the country right now, playing really well. Who's that guy? Rashad Weaver, I think, at Pitt. He's like the best interior defensive lineman in the country by some metrics. And I don't know. There's a couple other guys that I did. Brian tweeted this out a while ago. But, like, this is not...
Lynn McNeil at NC State had one of the best seasons of anybody at defensive tackle. That was a guy I was pounding the table for when Michigan was looking at him. And they let him go to NC State.
I feel like this is a Don. Oh God, I don't want to get too deep into it. We're already talking about it too much, but it just feels like Don Brown hates fat guys or something. Like he wants everyone to be like a lean, mean, like, you know, like blitzing machine and provide some level of like pass rush and be a disruptor. When like you need someone to eat blocks in the middle of your defense, and I can't imagine Don Brown just doesn't know that. This guy has been in the game for a while, but I mean, you look at this roster and it's like, what were they thinking? So.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a Boston College roster composition in that specific spot, and this isn't Boston College. You don't need.
Hey, I got some good news to wrap up this segment. The chances of both Don Brown and Sean Nua being on staff next year are very, very low at this point.
It's very true. So at least they'll eventually be able to turn the ship around. Unfortunately, they have left a hole in a position that takes the longest to develop people at. But I guess that's a problem for future years and other people. Moving on to defensive end, Michigan lost Quentin Somerville to a flip to UCLA on signing day, which there were rumblings that was going to happen throughout the week, so that didn't come as a major shock. Other than that, they have Keyshawn Bennett, another Connecticut recruit, and another 4-star New Englander, so that's a... That's nice when you're able to get that. And then the aforementioned TJ Guy, who's listed as a weak side end, is being recruited as a strong side end and might end up as a 3-tech. And he is also from New England. He is a Massachusetts native. So serious New England flavor here. Two very different looking players. Connor, what are your thoughts on kind of the...
They need more. Obviously, they wanted Somerville, and he's gone. They're going to need to find pass rush in general because they're now missing Somerville and Jennings, who are two guys who were meant to get after the quarterback. That said, I like Bennett, and I like Guy. One of my hot takes is that for all the things we just faulted Brown for and like the jokes about New England recruits, Michigan's actually gotten a lot out of a lot of these New England guys. And I think these are two other good New England players. I like their film. Bennett's like a rangy, lengthy guy who will fill out, and he's a good wrestler, so he understands. He's like got good, you know, good body control, good bend, all that stuff. Like I'm excited.
Hand fighting is important there. Hand fighting is really important there. That is an underrated thing. As somebody who's watched a lot of combat sports, I like seeing that in a scouting report for defense.
Yeah, I actually think he's one of my sleepers in this class. I mean, 4-star maybe can't be a sleeper, but like the point is I'm pretty excited for him. And Guy, you know, I like what I've seen with him too. He's also a hooper. He could potentially be a 3-tech, help out on the inside, though sadly he can't play nose tackle probably. But, you know, the Rivals guys are big on TJ Guy, at least the Michigan Rivals guys are. And so, yeah, to me, these are, you can make jokes about New England guys. These are two good pickups. The problem is that Michigan needed more and is going to have to go find more bodies for pass rush somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that I don't hate either of these guys. I like TJ Guy as a potential anchor or strong defensive end or whatever the next defensive coordinator calls it. I like Ketchwan Bennett. He seems very technical to me. I think that he's, you know, pretty polished for a high school player. You know, I think like I said, I think, you know, this roster at this point is a bit lacking in like pure pass rush guys. You know, it's Upshaw, Villane, Newberg, Ojabo, McGregor, Harrell, and then TJ Guy and Ketchwan Bennett. And I guess, you know, when I look at that, there's Ojabo you're hoping can be a pass rush guy. You know, McGregor you're hoping can be like an athletic strong end. Harrell, you know, I guess was also reputed to be a pass rush guy before he kind of fell in the rankings. So it's not as bad as I had initially thought. But you want a little bit more. I don't know. I think that Michigan here has done better than defensive tackle, but they're still trying to, you know, make lemonade out of lemons for, you know, and they don't have to do that. They're Michigan. Like, there are weak defensive ends that are highly rated that would come here. And I, you know, it's a little bit disappointing, but I do like these guys, like, on an individual level, so I'm not going to get as mad as I did at defensive tackle.
It'd be hard to, in fairness. yeah, no, I definitely agree with that take. Like, I mean, Bennett, I see some kind of, there is some corner turning potential with him on the edge, but Guy is definitely more of a anchor 3-tech, and Michigan just hasn't really recruited an elite edge rusher. You know, I mean, Quiddy Pay started to become one, and then got hurt this year when things kind of, I mean, he was really turning into one this season, and things just fell apart around him. But that was a 3-star from Rhode Island. It's got to be easy.
I mean, I'm hoping for Braden McGregor. He was a pretty big recruit as an edge guy. But like, regardless, Michigan needs more bullets in the gun. And you know, if Somerville was here, we'd have some. I'm sorry, Ace, I cut you off. I'm just.
No, you're good. It would definitely help to have just an extra body in there, even if it wasn't a super high end guy. Just to at least have, you know, another lottery ticket to steal one of Brian's favorite ways of discussing recruits. With Somerville out, I mean, I didn't think he was a particularly huge loss in the class just from an individual talent perspective. But when you start getting down to the numbers and looking at this roster construction and this line, you do just want to see a little bit more there, even though I mean, like Dan said, on an individual level, Bennett and Guy are both pretty promising prospects, and I like both of them. But at least now we can move on to the spot where I think all of our favorite defensive recruit lies, and that is Junior Colson at I guess, the Viper Sam spot. Colson is out of Tennessee. He was the only top 100 defensive recruit, sneaking in at number 95, listed at outside linebacker, but obviously Michigan is planning to use him in kind of a hybrid role, had a pretty strong offer list, and just looks super athletic and really kind of ideal for somebody who's a linebacker who can also actually split out and cover some guys.
Yeah, Connor and I mean, we basically, you know, our friendship basically started talking about Junior Colson. I love this guy, and I think he's just an absolute animal. I don't even know really where he projects because he's just that athletic and very raw. I think only started playing football a couple of maybe his junior year. Was that something we had heard? I forgot. I know that I remember hearing that he had just started.
Well, I think it was that he played receiver like as like a high school freshman or whatever, and switched over to defense as a junior or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. And he's just very athletic. He comes off the edge violently. He hits. He runs all over the field. He's very rangy. I kind of think of him as who's that Notre Dame linebacker that got hurt playing Ohio State, tore an ACL, and then he went to the Cowboys?
Jalen Smith.
He reminds me of Jalen Smith a little bit. That's my comp. I think he could be, where you lack pass rush on the defensive line in this class. I think you could make up for it just blitzing him because, you know, I couldn't be higher on him.
Yeah, he's somebody who, like, when you watch him play, like, I think his reported 40 time was in the high 4.7s. And watch him play, like, he plays way faster than that. Just in terms of his ability to range around the field and have burst and closing speed. And the kind of physical presence he brings is a big, rangy guy who used to play receiver and thus has some ball skills. Like, you can just tell watching opposing teams, they're terrified of him. And in Tennessee, which is a pretty good state. And LSU really wanted him. And a bunch of SEC schools actually made a push for him when they thought that Michigan was falling apart. And, you know, that tells you kind of all you need to know about the kind of just terrifying athlete he is. We're very lucky to have him.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I love the guy's film. And he's somebody who projects, at least initially, as somebody who's probably going to play outside of the box more than inside. You know, either be that an overhang defender or slide out over the slot, kind of depending on the opposing formation. But down the road, he's got a frame. I mean, he's 6'2", 230-ish right now. He's got a frame and athleticism type where, depending on what scheme Michigan is playing and kind of what they want to emphasize on their defense, having somebody like that as a true inside linebacker who can still be that good of a cover guy can really change the outlook of a defense. And also, I mean, we all remember how fun it was to watch Devin Bush show that sideline to sideline range from the inside of a defense. So Colson is a guy who I see initially playing in space more, but he's somebody I think the sky is the limit for him in terms of with that coverage ability and the way that college football is going. He's just a really, really exciting prospect in terms of his versatility and just the entire package of what he brings to the table.
So then I guess, you know, moving on from there, other linebackers in this class, we had Tyler McLaurin and Jaden Hood. I think Connor and I are similarly high on Jaden Hood. I don't know. I don't even really think we need to go that much in depth on him. He reminds me a lot of, like, maybe a little bit slower Devin Bush. I don't know if anyone else has that same take. Textbook Don Brown inside linebacker. And whether Don Brown is here or not next year, I think, you know, this is the kind of guy that he's the type of linebacker that Michigan has consistently brought in. And I am not at all, you know, worried about him. And then Tyler McLaurin is a little bit, I would say, like maybe a poor man's Junior Colson, like a little bit, kind of that still that Sam build where he can come off the edge a little bit and is a little bit taller in the middle. I don't know. What are you guys' takes on these two?
I'm with you on Hood. Like, he's just sort of that compact missile that Michigan loves. You know, we always bring up the Bush comp, and of course he's probably not going to be that good, but similar case where it's like if he were 2 inches taller, he probably would have been like, you know, a top 150 guy. He's 5'11", so Michigan has no problem with that. Yeah, I think just a great pickup. Everything about his film is encouraging. And McLaurin is like, you know, one of those solid Midwestern linebackers who sometimes become like fourth, fifth year starters and contributors at Michigan. So No complaints here. Linebacker has been a strength of this program, which is why it was so weird that we had to put walk-ons out there against Penn State to get run over. But that's a broader conversation, maybe.
One for a different podcast, I think. But it was encouraging to see them pull in this linebacker class because at least in the middle of what was kind of a mess in other spots, this was a, I would say, an unequivocally good haul. I agree that Hood is a pretty solid prospect and maybe a guy who's almost become a little bit overlooked because he was an early developer physically and is somewhat close to max out, at least for what you're going to get in terms of a high school program. But he's maxed out at like college size and he's been very, very productive. So I think that's somebody who sometimes gets overlooked, especially as a college prospect when they're, you know, like I've said before, and as we've talked about on, I know extensively on the EMCO podcast and in roundtables, that the recruiting sites are increasingly projecting these guys for the NFL instead of college. So I think for those purposes, Hood and McLaurin may be a little underrated because they don't have as clean NFL projections as they do college projections. So I'm pretty happy with this haul. Cornerback, on the other hand, at least Jaden McBurrow's stuck.
Yeah. I mean, McBurrow's, I want to say this very briefly. I think he's good. Like, he's not very tall, but he is legitimately fast based on his film. He can run, right? I mean, and Miami really wanted him. You know, he had seemingly committable Ohio State interest and maybe also some Bama, Georgia, Clemson type interest, at least a couple of those schools. I think he's one of the more clearly underrated guys here because he is kind of a high three star, and if there was a regular camp season, probably would have jumped higher. So I'm happy with him. But Dan's gonna sit, give the obvious take here, which is that you can't just have Jaden McBurrow in the class.
Jaden McBurrow should have been the third corner we took in this class. I mean, like, what is there to say? I mean, there's even, we know for sure that on this roster right now, there's Vincent Gray, who is bad. Jemon Green, who, you know, we think we have something there. Like, I am optimistic about Jemon Green going forward. Jalen Perry and DJ Turner, not too optimistic, quite frankly.
Could not get on the field this year.
Yeah, I can't be optimistic about either of them. George Johnson, converted receiver. Andre Selden, you know, hopeful, but is also 5'9". Green Warren, I guess we don't know anything about yet. He could still be good. That's at least a lottery pick. Iman Dennis.
He was reputed to be a little...
that's never been a problem before. Right. So.
No.
And then Iman Dennis, who, again, another converted receiver. And then with all that on the... Like, there should have been two four-star corners in this class and Jaden McBurrow's. You know, it's... And corner is even a position where it's really hard to find good players in the transfer portal because you're usually getting transfers from like lower ranked programs that even if they have good corners are like not up to the task athletically to play in the Big Ten. So, I mean, yeah, I don't. This is like the defensive tackle recruiting haul. It's just at least they got somebody here, I guess, is what you can say. But you absolutely needed two or three, and they just didn't do it at all.
Yeah, you make a good point about the transfer market because one thing about cornerback compared to other positions is you can play a number of them and rotate through a decent amount of guys and keep a fair number of guys happy at that position on one team. And so guys who are playing time transfers, at least. I mean, you never know. Maybe someone pops up for a reason other than playing time and you get lucky. But generally, if my memory serves, Michigan's most impactful transfer corner in recent memory was Grant Mason from Stanford, who was a very nondescript starting corner for some of Michigan's, we'll go with declining secondaries. It's just Michigan has brought in other transfers before who they thought were going to contribute at defensive back who just haven't done anything at all to the point where I don't remember these guys' names off the top of my head.
Trey Waynes? Was it Trey Waynes? or what was there was some
Trey
guy
Wayne's
named,
is Michigan State's corner.
No, no, it was there was some guy Wayne that came with Harbaugh from Stan that like
oh Wayne Lyons. That's
Wayne
was
Lyons.
A great Stanford
that's right.
name.
Wayne
that's right. Lyons.
Wow, well, that's a deep. That's how you know I'm a real you, fan. Remembering Wayne.
Let me
Lyons.
Drop some optimism on you guys. I think Michigan still likes their chances with Sierre Wright, who is like the full package at corner. So you know, hopefully he hasn't signed yet. So I'm holding out hope there. And here's my other piece of optimism. Mike Sainer still used to play corner in high school.
Oh man,
we're digging
another
there.
Wide receiver that'll solve everything.
I have a real piece of optimism here. Michigan should be on the phone with Julian Barnett yesterday.
Most definitely
top 50 corner at Michigan State that you know that transferred from their program for one reason or another. I don't care why he busted out of Michigan State. They need him on the roster tomorrow.
Leaving Michigan State's program is generally a positive in my book from a evaluating personality perspective, as long as it was of their own volition. At safety, there's one. The good news is this is actually a position group that Michigan has stocked relatively well. Unlike with previous position groups, this is not a major complaint here. In this case, bringing in a somewhat nondescript three-star in Ohio and Rod Moore is not a disaster like it would be at, say,
yeah, I think he's kind of another – I know this is a very Homer thing to say, but like a lot of people have been saying for a while that he's a little bit underranked. I think if you watch his film, he looks like a guy who should be, you know, higher than his ranking. I'm happy with him. Can't say much more than that. Looks like a contributor at safety.
Yep, this position group is relatively stocked, and so I'm okay with just one.
Yeah, he did have a Notre Dame offer out there, and a Wisconsin offer, and some Kentucky, Iowa, Indiana, some program Cincinnati. Some
you just named six programs with better defenses than Michigan. So,
yes, I sure did. Did I mention Northwestern too? Because they're on there.
nice.
Ah, boy. All right. So that, and then I guess special teams, Michigan brought in Tommy Doman, who is the number two overall punter, I think, in the country, and also a somewhat touted kicking prospect. Will Hart has already put his name in the transfer portal, so I think he saw this guy coming. And because I don't think Brad Robbins has scared him, Will Hart, off specifically. But you never know with frickin' punters, and this is flimsier evaluations than we get even on the offensive line. But good job, I guess. got a guy.
He's gonna turn
like,
it all around. He's gonna save
what
us.
Else to say.
He's a six star per one of those kicker rating services.
Oh yeah, no, they get wild with their rating system.
It's
sometimes.
Great.
I love it.
We love you, Tommy Doman.
The kicker recruiting sites and they're pretending that the other ones don't exist and holding their own camps with all the same guys. I just love it. It's great.
That's awesome.
All right, I think we should just wrap up this discussion real quick with what we were talking about in segment one, which is that I would say this is a disappointing recruiting class if you are looking at it from the perspective of continuing or like building any sort of success under Jim Harbaugh that's different from what they've had. Even with the offensive guys, they just haven't shown that they can take advantage of that talent. And on the defensive side of the ball, there just isn't enough talent there. But if you look at this as a transition class, having a transition class come in at number 12 in the country with a couple position groups you have to patch over and a number of blue chips that you can use right away on offense is about as good as it's going to get for a transition class. And so for me, even though this was a point in Harbaugh's favor in terms of the job he's done coaching, I actually think this provides more argument to get rid of him now because you are absolutely not going to do better on a transition class than they've done with this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you also got a lot of guys that aren't likely to even to ask out of their letters of intent if there is a coaching transition. And I also think that this is it's a point in favor of getting rid of Harbaugh, because this isn't the type of class that Harbaugh needed if he was going to turn things around next year. Like, this defense needs to be rebuilt from the ground up at this point, given the talent on roster and the talent they brought in here. And this isn't a team that's ready-made to, you know, win next year. I totally agree with Ace here.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add other than going through this defensive class was kind of like the acceptance stage for me. Being like, this is actually worse than I thought it was on defense. It's kind of remarkable how the staff has screwed that up. So, yeah, it's not a point in favor of Harbaugh, really. If you could keep all of these guys, I agree. It would be a great transition class. So, yeah.
We will find out how Ward Manuel decides to treat it, because I truly do think the decision remains in his hands, and that we do not know yet, and that assumptions of him botching this are very, very premature, given what's going on right now. That's rehashing a little bit of segment one, so I think that means we are done with the football talk. On the other side of this break, going to bring in Alex Cook to talk a little basketball. Dan and Connor, thanks for the recruiting insight. We'll catch you on the other side of this break.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
Such a very long time, I finally found the mind to explain where I've been living. I know I'm here to stay, waiting on this better day. So please, child, there was something new.
Now we get to welcome in old friend of the pod, longtime contributor, Alex Cook from the Castle. How you doing, man? Yeah, you got to sit out the tough part and join for the fun. So, absolutely. So we are, as you said, 6-0, 1-0 in conference after Sunday's victory over Penn State that was maybe a little tighter than people would have liked, but. Penn State is a relatively frisky team, and now Michigan has a layoff until Christmas Day when they get the wonderful present of traveling to Lincoln, Nebraska for their first road game of the season against the Huskers. And then they turn right back around after that and play on New Year's Eve in Maryland. So not an ideal basketball schedule if you are looking to fully celebrate holidays, but a nice time, I would say, for Michigan to get a little bit of a break, kind of regroup and see what they have, especially with Austin Davis out for at least probably a few weeks with that plantar fasciitis injury. So Michigan now has Hunter Dickinson starting at center, which is what we expected would happen sooner or later anyway, but that is now official. I do not expect that to ever go back. And Brandon Johns is your backup center pretty much by default right now, with Terrence Williams also factoring in a little bit there. We saw him at the end of the Penn State game. Alex, obviously we are all very, very excited about Dickinson. What have your impressions been about him, and what do you see in terms of this backup center situation? When Austin Davis comes back, do you see him retaking his role, at least minutes-wise, or do you think that Brandon Johns has a chance to kind of cement his rotation spot here?
As far as Dickinson, I feel like it's almost easy to take some of his skill set for granted already. Just the amount of touch and feel that he exhibits, you know, in the post, when he has the ball, as a passer, scoring as well, you know, he goes up strong to the rim. And, you know, in terms of Big Ten big men, you're really looking at Garza at Iowa, obviously a National Player of the Year candidate. Trace Jackson Davis at Indiana, another really strong player. Wisconsin has some good centers. Coburn at Illinois is pretty strong as well. But Dickinson gives Michigan a presence where you can legitimately play through a guy that's 7 foot on the block and create good offense off of him, and creates a lot of gravity, just even the threat of him getting touches in the post. And as far as the backup big situation, I would anticipate that, you know, Davis can give a good 10 minutes a game if he's healthy, you know, bang in the post, get a couple buckets perhaps, you know, really, really be strong on the glass. But as we saw with Penn State, Michigan chose to go with a pretty short rotation. And I think, you know, Johns, Shondi Brown coming off the bench, you have a pretty concrete rotation there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shondi Brown has obviously been a tremendously pleasant surprise, even for those of us who expected him to improve on his efficiency from where he was at Wake. I'm not sure any of us expected 44% three-point shooting on taking more than half his shots from beyond the arc, in addition to being a real stalwart defender. Do you think my other kind of lineup intrigue with this team is how Juwan Howard handles kind of the guard triumvirate of Eli Brooks, Mike Smith, and Shondi Brown? Because while Brown is obviously more of a wing than a guard, he is the de facto two guard if he does work his way into the starting five. With Brooks being a little turnover prone on offense and Smith not being great on defense, it does seem like there's room for Brown to move into the lineup. It also feels great to be able to bring him in off the bench. Do you have a preference for like how they utilize him?
You know, as far as Smith and Brooks go in the backcourt, you know, it's obviously not an ideal pairing given the height there. You know, Brooks is, you know, about 6 foot at the two guard. Smith is obviously under that, maybe close 5'9", 5'10", at point guard. You would like to see Brooks, you know, he's getting about 20 minutes a game now, probably get a little more than that. I think he can play well alongside either of the starting guards, but yeah, like you said, you know, probably don't expect him to be a 44% three-point shooter. I would like to say that his defense has been particularly outstanding so far this season, you know, as an on-ball defender, as an off-ball defender. And, you know, Michigan, under Juwan Howard, you can see the roster kind of moving towards where, you know, with Dickinson, with Wagner, with Shondi Brown even at the two, there's great positional length, and you can really see that on the defensive end. And when Shondi's playing at his best, you know, like against Penn State, he didn't even score, but he played a great game for the 20 minutes he was in there. And, you know, space the floor, play defense. I think, you know, you could see maybe 25, maybe 30 minutes a game. As far as who starts, you know, I don't necessarily think that matters as much as, you know, getting him enough minutes where he's effectively a starter.
Yeah, this is a team where the distribution of minutes and the closing lineup might matter, I would say, argue, do matter a lot more than who takes the floor initially. Two of those guys who are taking the floor initially and have been a little bit up and down, Although that might be a little bit unfair to say in Isaiah Livers' case. But Livers and Wagner have not necessarily been the go-to guys that were maybe kind of the roles that were expected of them in the beginning of the season. Instead, more of the offense is running through Dickinson than I think any of us anticipated. And that's been a very good thing. But you've got Livers and Wagner both below 20% usage. Wagner actually all the way down at 17.5. Unfortunately, Wagner's outside shot hasn't really come around yet. Is this starting to reach point of concern for you? I assume we're of the mind that Livers is going to generally be pretty solid.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, both are quality wings in the Big Ten. I think Wagner in particular hasn't really lived up to quite the NBA expectations of his game. You know, as you said, his outside shot hasn't really come along. You know, a lot of people like to blame the wrist injury that he had last preseason as, you know, a reason why his outside shot wasn't so great last season. I think right now at this point, you know, he's less of a floor spacer and more of just a straight line driver off of residual action. You know, I haven't really seen him show a lot of chops in the pick and roll game necessarily, although, you know, I think he has good vision. But he definitely is at his best when he's, you know, attacking downhill. So, yeah, like you said, you know, I'm not really sure about his three-point shot, but, you know, in terms of the rest of the lineup, I think, you know, in spacing isn't too much of a concern. As far as Livers, you know, he's had, you know, the UCF game in particular was pretty rough for him. I know that he got to the line a lot against Penn State, but I think Livers is pretty much who we expect him to be at this point, you know, knockdown off-ball shooter, you know, not really a ton of, you know, on-the-ball juice. And I think, you know, he's had a couple nice plays out of the pick and roll, but he's not on-ball creator by any means. So, you know, if you can really pick to one specific thing about this Michigan roster is that you don't have you know, Xavier Simpson was so dominant last year in terms of the effect he had on the offense and the influence that he had on the team. You know, Mike Smith has shown a little bit of that spark when he's been on the ball in the half court. And Michigan likes to get out and run, has some guys that can attack the basket, but it doesn't have, you know, really dynamic maestro in charge of the offense.
Yeah, we have seen, I like the way that Michigan has approached offense this year, where they are pushing the ball more. They know that when Dickinson is in, that their best way of running offense is to have him be the hub and let defenses kind of get bent out of shape around him because of his gravity. But things do get a little bogged down with this team when you start looking for a late clock shot creator. So that is something where they were definitely hoping for more from Wagner. But most of what this team is getting, I would say, on offense is coming from the structure of the offense. And Juwan Howard has done a fantastic job with that. But it is something that when Michigan gets into the meat of this schedule, starts playing, you know, teams like Wisconsin or Iowa, or starts facing the size of a team like Illinois, or even just a really strong across the board athletic defensive team like Rutgers. God, it's still weird to say that. you know, there is some worry that the lack of individual shot creation is going to get this offense to bog down at times when it's pretty inconvenient. At the same time, they're also able to manufacture buckets in a way that they maybe weren't able to do as much last year because they were limited, kind of limited to the pick and roll Xavier Simpson Teske attack, just because you needed to have the ball in Simpson's hands. So still a lot to kind of see playing out with this team, currently rocking the number 7 offense in the country and the number 34 defense, according to KenPom, 15th nationally overall. Just to wrap this up, kind of where do you see this team falling among what seems like a very tightly clustered top end of the Big Ten? And should we be so lucky as to see postseason basketball this year? Where do you see this team kind of being on track to get?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say because their toughest opponent's been Penn State at home. You know, Penn State's expected to finish towards the bottom of the conference. it's just weird with the coronavirus year, you know, playing a bunch of MAC teams, Oakland. You don't really have that non-conference slate where you can compare teams, you know, very well across conferences or even within a conference. As far as Michigan, you know, I would expect Michigan to, you know, be one of the field of 68. It's hard to tell really where the rest of the league falls. You know, Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin kind of appear towards the top of the rankings at the beginning of the season. Michigan State has a talented team. You look at Rutgers, like you said, Ohio State. Michigan should finish, I would say, in the top half of the table, so to speak. But, you know, would I expect them to get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament? I would like to see a little bit more, a little bit more spark offensively and, you know, to see them prove it a little bit more against, quality opponents. But with Davis out, the rotation is looking a little thin. You know, Juwan only played 7 players against Penn State. Williams has played a little bit this year, played pretty well. It would be nice to see him get a little bit longer of a leash, as well as, Zeb Jackson coming off the bench, you know, to see some trust from the coaching staff in him. But Michigan, you know, as long as, you know, everybody stays healthy, I would expect is pretty much on course for a tournament bid.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with you there. And the good thing for their kind of development this season, and also with Davis being injured right now, is that Penn State will actually continue to be the toughest opponent they've faced, at least by KenPom turns, until actually they play Penn State again on the road on January 9th, and then host Wisconsin on January 12th. So there is some time to work things out. You've got Nebraska on Christmas, as said before. Maryland is kind of scuffling this year, so that is a pretty winnable road game. And Northwestern is bad. Minnesota might not be very good. Michigan has both those games at home before traveling to Penn State in January. So there is definitely some time for them to kind of let players work through some things. Hopefully, like you said, get a little bit more trust in a couple of the freshmen who have shown some flashes, and in both the cases, Williams and Zeb Jackson could fill roles that Michigan really needs somebody to step up and fill, or maybe not needs, but could really use somebody to step up and fill. Having a solid 9-man rotation is definitely a luxury in college basketball, but Michigan could get to that point. So we'll see. I mean, according to KenPom, Michigan is not projected to lose a game until late January. I'm expecting they will drop one before then. A lot of these are very close to coin flips. But this is a pretty ideal schedule for a young team, and as long as they're able to maintain their depth, I might actually be a little bit more optimistic than Alex in terms of their ability to bump into the top four. But with that, this has been a long podcast, so I think it's time to wrap it up. Any last thoughts on the basketball team before I let you go, Alex?
You know, it's nice that they have a long runway heading into Big Ten play, but I'm excited to see them play against top-tier opponents, in particular Dickinson, against some of the bigger or better big men in the Big Ten. You know, he's pretty talented guy, and it's a fun team this year. You know, that's really all you can ask for, is entertaining and, you know, hopefully successful.
Absolutely. I have very much been watching other Big Ten games with how does Hunter Dickinson match up against these guys in mind. So I was watching Purdue, Ohio State with a certain level of intent, especially when Purdue's 7'4" freshman Zach Edey was out on the court, and Edey does not look like somebody who's going to very comfortably handle Dickinson's combination of size, bulk, and skill.
Yeah, in Ohio State, you look at their front court, it's not a lot of size. So
yeah, especially if EJ Liddell is going to be out. I mean, Liddell was undersized to begin with, but if Liddell is going to be out for an extended period of time with mono, that is both a thinner front court than ideal and one that doesn't really have anybody taller than 6'8 that's playable. So there are certainly some teams out here where it looks like Dickinson is going to be able to be a dominant force, and I'm excited for Michigan to start getting to the point in the schedule where that swings games instead of just you know, gets Michigan a 20-point win over Toledo or something like that. So a lot of fun to be had yet this season. Alex, thank you for joining me. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to now departed Connor and Dan for joining me earlier on this show. We will join you again, probably not next week because of Christmas, but the week after that, once we have some basketball in the books to talk about, and probably, hopefully, maybe the resolution of this coaching saga as well, however that turns out. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. We will catch you on the other side of the holidays. Cue the music.